Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Joy 94.9.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Have your say. 1300 Joy 949.
Gay News Week.
Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome to Gay News Week on Joy 94.9 with Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt.
Here at Gay News Week, we aim to cover topics that have been in the news over the last week, how they impact you and our community.
On tonight's show, a new report on harassment in the workplace, the latest comments from Mitt Romney in the US, some observations from Superstorm Sandy. We'll chat with Liz from the Darabin Council Sex, Sexuality and Gender Diverse Committee, and of course we'll do an Around the World wrap up. If at any time you want to get in touch with us, this is how you do so.
You're listening to the Gay Newsweek podcast with Sammy, Jeffrey and Matt. Get in touch. Email gaynewsweek@joy.org.au or check out joy.org.au/gaynewsweek for all of the links to our social media pages.
But first, the Human Rights Commission has released a new report which found harassment in the workplace is still a problem, with many respondents unaware of what constitutes sexual harassment. The Working Without Fear report was released yesterday and also found a quarter of cases involved men harassing other men. Sex Discrimination Commissioner Elizabeth Broderick says sexual harassment is unlawful and has no place in Australian workplaces.
The report is the third report of its kind to have been released, it previously having been done in 2003 and in 2008. So for the first time there, we're starting to get a pretty good look at some of the longitudinal data around sexual harassment in the workplace. The list of points coming out of it we'll come to shortly, but it essentially shows that sexual harassment is a persistent and pervasive problem in Australian workplaces and that progress has been made since the last survey.
I think one of the things that's very interesting to come out of that is when you're thinking of sexual harassment in the workplace, it's a natural leap for you to go to it's a male colleague making remarks towards a female colleague. And yes, that does happen. And it accounts for more than half of all sexual harassment. But the interesting thing that's actually come out of this is male harassment of men accounted for nearly a quarter of sexual harassment in the workplace.
Which is really interesting because obviously there's so much awareness out there at the moment and making sure that this harassment is being cut out. But to have it changing rather than just decreasing is a bit of a problem.
You have to wonder why that's the case. And there are two thoughts around it. One of them is that there's an increased level of occurrence of harassment and therefore it's reporting, or whether it's just that people are more likely to report now, they feel more comfortable to report, and so maybe the level's the same as it was before. It could even be falling with a higher level of reporting. So it's hard to get a feel for the statistics, but I think certainly the preparedness to report is something that will have increased over the time of the reporting.
Yeah, which is positive, of course, because the campaigns of making sure you do feel comfortable going to someone and saying, this is what's happening to me, is actually working. People are feeling more comfortable of going to their superiors and saying, this is happening.
I think that, you know, as you said, that's something that's great to come out of it. I mean, myself, I am had been affected by sexual harassment in the workplace quite a few years ago, and I'm talking nearly 20 years ago. I was working for a male boss who was having his advances towards me rejected, and they were very sexual. And in the end, there were trumped up charges being made about my inability to do my job, and my employment was ended. Now, at the time, I was only in my early 20s and had no idea on how to go, and just basically sucked it up and went and found another job. But now, you know, it's quite interesting to see that there's actually that support out there. And it actually damages your self-esteem and that quite a bit. You know, what have I actually done wrong to deserve these advances? And where do I go from here?
And certainly what you're saying is borne out in the numbers, in that 21% of people aged 15 and older have reported sexual harassment. And certainly there is throughout the data a predominance of people in the younger age categories as having reported being the victims of sexual harassment. So it is something that is still perpetuated on a power basis from powerful people. Although there seems to have been a slight decrease in bosses harassing. So that's interesting. I think that probably reflects a greater level of knowledge out there and quite possibly a higher number of female bosses. So probably the mix of who is in fact a boss has changed somewhat over the 9 years since these surveys started.
Yeah, certainly. I want to hear from you. Have you experienced sexual harassment or harassment of any description in the workplace? Let us know 0427JOY949 or email us in the studio on air at joy.org.au.
Sexual harassment can basically be pretty much anything. It's not actually you being groped or propositioned. It can be as much as dirty looks or suggestive comments or evasive questioning. And the reality is nearly 50% of reports is just someone making an intrusive question into your life, an inappropriate question about, you know, sexual comments and things that you don't want to talk about. So it's not just the obvious things that we would think, that, you know, the male boss walking up to the female secretary and saying, "Hello, darling, how about a bit?" It goes in to be a lot more extensive than that.
Yeah, and certainly there's a lot of data that has come out in this study, and nearly one third of respondents reported sexual harassment indicated that the complaint had a negative effect on them, that they felt victimised or that they suffered a demotion. And this is an increase from 2008. So people feel that reporting the events to their bosses or to the authorities has actually resulted in an adverse outcome for them. So it makes you wonder how the likelihood of reporting these sorts of things will go into the future, because if you're sensing or feeling that you're being persecuted as a result, the likelihood of reporting, you would think, might go down.
And I think the reality is, as this survey has come about, is it's not just about it's not just things that happen in the heterosexual world. You know, there are comments being made in the workplace. You know, like I said, you know, it's quite a high statistic of men making comments to men.
One of the things that I quite liked in the study is that just over half of the respondents said that they had took action after witnessing or learning about the sexual harassment of another person. So I like the idea that people out there in the workplaces, when they see this behaviour or hear about it, actually do something about it on behalf of their colleagues. I think that that's a good finding, though it's only 50%, but it's still a good number.
Yeah, definitely. It shows that people are looking out for their co-workers. And at the same time, this is what the campaigns are trying to achieve, is it doesn't make sure that you're looking out for other people as well. It's not just you should report it if it happens to you. Report it if you see anything. You are listening to Gay Newsweek right here on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
US Storm is something that has been in the news a lot over the last few days. It's Superstorm Sandy. Oh, I nearly said that wrong. And there have been, in the United States at least, 40 reported deaths so far, as was reported in the news a few minutes ago. But there were, of course, about 66 reported deaths in Haiti and around the Caribbean prior to the storm making it to the United States. So there's 100 dead at least, as far as the reporting goes. There have been 100 houses have been lost. It's across 8 states in America. There's 60 millimetres of snow in some parts of the affected area, so on top of the rain and the storms and the water damage. And there have been millions of people displaced. So it's an absolutely horrific event, many times worse in severity than Katrina. What do we think about it?
Yeah, certainly. I was watching a little bit of coverage across earlier in the week, and especially yesterday, where it kind of really started to hit and there were some problems. And obviously, the each news channel has their their weatherman doing this. I'm a newsreader. I should be able to say these words. I can't. They had their weatherman explaining what was happening, and one of them actually described it as the perfect storm, because it was a combination. It wasn't just the hurricane coming out of the sea. There was also a jet stream that was coming through and a lot of cold air, which was kind of coming together and just making these catastrophic kind of environment.
The other thing that was notable is that there was a particular moon phase going on where the moon was closer, and therefore there was a rare high tide happening at the same time around the harbour of New York and up that east coast. So it was a high tide, the highest for the year or something like that, and they had all of this extra water and storm happening at the same time. So in terms of the perfect storm comment, it was exactly that. It was everything bad that could happen did happen.
Yeah, we had one of those basically supercells that they talk about, all converging with different types of weather all there at the same time.
I love that kind of terminology, a supercell.
Yeah, I know. It makes me sound very technical.
It does.
One of the things that I took away from watching the coverage, of course, as you do, it's almost like watching a car accident. You have to just sit there and continue to watch, you know, it unfold in front of you. And I know they're trying to give us the best possible coverage of the story that they can get.
Mm.
But the big thing that surprises me is we have reporters standing out in 4 feet of water, mm-hmm. saying...
Flood water, yeah.
Flood water.
Stuff rushing by
flowing.
Them.
Flowing. Past
yep.
them,
yep.
barely able to stand up, warning that the police are now arresting people. It's against the law for you to be outside. You should not be in the area. Everyone that should have left has left, and they're standing out in the middle of it showing us the story. Now, I know they have to cover it, but really?
It was. We saw similar things when there were the floods here in Australia, up in Queensland and Victoria, actually, where a lot of the TV channels, they wanted to get outside and they wanted to be in the floodwaters and they wanted to have everything flying around them. But then at the same time, they were reporting from those locations that people are not to be outside. It's very dangerous out here. Meanwhile, there's debris flying past the reporter's head, but that's just irrelevant, apparently, because what are they, just invincible or something?
Replaceable, probably.
Well, you know, I do have to wonder. I mean, I know Matt was saying earlier that Anderson Cooper, who yeah. is a very highly paid, very highly respected journalist,
yeah.
was actually out in the weather, the dangerous weather, covering this. So, you know, I mean, you know, maybe that was you know, his producer is a born-again Christian and that was his plan to start wiping the gays off one by one. But,
which is
you know,
actually a very good point that you bring that up because, of course, I was only waiting for it. As soon as I found these just massive disasters going through the news and going, okay, well, when are we going to be blamed for it? Well, it turns out we have, hasn't it?
A Christian preacher, Chaplain John McTiernan, has said God's judgment of gays causing the hurricane nearing the east coast of the United States. An anti-Christian preacher is already blaming Hurricane Sandy on us gays.
Which is crazy because we've seen the weathermen, they've explained everything, all these weather things, they're natural, it's a natural disaster. There's water flowing through all the subways and everything, it's just not happening, but apparently we're very powerful.
We are very powerful, or so say a lot of people. And we're not just responsible for this storm, ladies and gentlemen
out
there.
Of course, we've heard it a lot before.
It's not just that. Mm. We, the gay community, are responsible for last year's US earthquake. We're responsible for 9/11, apparently Hurricane Isaac, Hurricane Katrina, the 2007 flooding in the UK, pedophiles in the Catholic Church.
The Colorado Batman movie massacre.
Of course, we were responsible.
Global warming.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
Now, I also remember reading reports.
What can I say?
During,
we're hot.
Yeah, during Black Saturday, that you know, one of the fires was started by a lightning strike. That was actually our fault.
Oh, we caused the lightning, did we?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Interesting.
Hand of God.
For someone who got God with a lot of Christian faiths and God-based faiths is that God controls everything in the world. So why do they believe that us gays, are they saying that we're God maybe?
No, I think that the whole reasoning behind all this is God's way of causing natural disasters and the hope that he will actually wipe quite a few of us out in the process. So it's sort of like, you know, he sort of thinks it's a bit of, you know, hedging his bets in the process. But this...
So does that mean only gay people have been killed from these natural disasters?
Well, it doesn't quite mean that.
I mean, one of the interesting things is the argument goes, or so far as I can follow it, which is so far as it can be followed, I guess,
yes,
is that God, who is all-powerful, doesn't like us and therefore gives us a lot of power to cause damage. that affects people that are mostly not us.
The funny thing is this wonderfully educated Christian preacher has said on his website, which is called Defend, Proclaim the Faith. He also says the gathering storm. I know. The gathering storm is God's judgment on gays, punishing President Barack Obama for coming out in support of marriage equality.
Oh, so it's actually Obama's fault, really.
Supposedly, Obama is 100% behind the Muslim Brotherhood, which has vowed to destroy Israel and take Jerusalem. So, you know, it's actually very interesting that we are that powerful and in the world that according to the Christian faith that we need to be wiped out.
Moving on from that into the elections in the United States, we're 1 week away from the presidential election occurring. And so these storms have taken over the news coverage. And so there's no oxygen, so no coverage of substance really going on of the presidential race. The president has pulled back from his campaign events. Mitt Romney's done one which didn't, which got a quite a bit of coverage. Both of the vice presidential candidates are still out on the hustings. But it's a curious thing what's going to happen, because Romney is on record in 2011 about saying he wanted to dismantle the Emergency Management Agency in the United States. And so the people that are now responding to and saving and running the response to this disaster, he wanted to dismantle. And usually what happens in these situations is people find comfort and move towards the person that is their leader and in power. So this could be good for Obama's re-election. Whether we should be seeing it in those terms, whether the candidates like to believe they are or not, of course they are.
Yeah, traditionally, it's interesting that you mention that traditionally in these natural disasters, they usually prove very well for the government, but it's not always the case. Like, for example, in Queensland, when we saw Anna Bligh out there every day giving media updates, speaking to people, doing whatever she can to help, she was still booted out at the end of her term, which
I think unfortunately, the Queensland thing is a little bit different, because a lot of people were impressed by her and the way that she came together and showed a huge amount of compassion and understanding for people within the state that she was leading. But, you know, for someone like that, is they actually took on quite a bad downfall already led by previous governments due to the health system, and they didn't have a chance of staying in. But speaking of politicians being on record, Romney is actually on record back in 2005 on his stand against gay adoption. Now, we actually have some footage on that we're going to play for you right now.
Today, same-sex couples are marrying under the law in Massachusetts. Some are actually having children born to them. We've been asked to change their birth certificates, to remove the phrase mother and father and replace it with parent A and parent B. It's not right on paper. It's not right. In fact, every child has the right to have a mother and a father.
Joy 94.9.
The interesting thing is it doesn't seem to be that his stance has changed a great deal. Now, this is a man who has never been a very big fan of women, and particularly our community.
So that clip was actually from 2005 when he was speaking to a Republican presidential event, wasn't it?
And I think that's sort of probably a little bit similar to our friend Alan Jones, who thought that he was speaking at a private gathering with the Liberal Party.
So that's the thing. They feel most comfortable in these situations, and that's when they really let their truth come out, which is actually great for us because we get to see who the real people are.
Well, who the real person is. And certainly in these circumstances, I'm sure there are some comments that he wished he hadn't made. Not that his view necessarily has changed or that he doesn't believe what he said, but it would just be easier for him if the comments weren't out there in the public domain to be able to be replayed so that Obama's side, in this instance, can use these comments against Romney.
Now, Matt, we've had some messages in.
We certainly have. James from Eltham has contacted us saying, blaming the gays for natural disasters must seem logical to these people. What do you expect? They believe in imaginary things. Of course, thank you very much, James, for that one. But we have to make a point that these people aren't representing the views of all Christians. They're only representing the views of the extremists, really, and they're rather outspoken and they're not represented They're not representing their entire community.
And we've also had a message in from Betty. Great to hear Natural Humour and Gay Newsweek. Reporters go to any length to get a story, no matter how dangerous it is. Go gay power.
Absolutely wonderful. And it's true. The reporters will go to any length.
The reporters will go to any lengths, but I certainly get it when you're going into a war zone or you're reporting on people that are in crisis around the world. Absolutely. But I don't think that's what this is. I think this is just some good B-roll background coverage. Mm. And you're listening to us on Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
A Derebin City Council election candidate is in a bit of hot water after he allegedly posted homophobic comments on the council's Facebook page. MCV's reporting Ananya Ananyevsky posted on the page that he would rid the community of crap such as homosexuality parades. Gay Newsweek spoke with Mr. Ananyevsky late this afternoon and he said the comments were alleged and he would love to have the opportunity to explain himself. Joining us on the line is Liz Landray from the Derebin Sex, Sexuality and Gender Diversity Committee. Liz, thank you for joining us on Gay News Week.
Hi. It's good to be here.
Hello, Liz. It's Jeffrey and I'm here with Sammy and Matt. So thank you very much for taking the time to have a chat with us. We are going to come back at the later bit to talk about what's going on in Darabin, but we might first of all cover what's gone on with the Facebook comments that went up. Can you give us a rundown on what's gone on there?
Well, I heard about it after the comments were taken down. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see them myself, but I heard from a journalist locally and that the comments were up there because Darabin hadn't disabled their Facebook page. And, you know, they were in Macedonian, and so it was a bit unfortunate that, you know, you could use Google Translate and then you could find out what they were. But that particular journalist did give me a fairly good indication. You know, he was referring to some parade in a very sort of ambiguous way. I mean, Darabin's never had a parade, so I don't, you know, that was completely, you know, out of line and, you know, unfounded. So, you know, as if Darabin's spending money on a parade and it's a waste of money. That was his, that was the sort of tone of what he was on about. You know, there were some things that he said about, you know, he was very derogatory comments and then, you know, he also, in the same breath, he's saying, but he's not scared of gays, you know.
So, right. You know. From what you understand what the comments actually were they more of just kind of, were they trying to reach out to the Macedonian community and get their vote, or was it like a policy speech, or what was it?
I actually think that he didn't really put much time into it. I think it was a little bit off the cuff, unfortunately. Certainly don't think he would have done that if he'd thought through what the implications would be, knowing that, you know, it can be captured again, time and time again, in different formats, and so it will stay with him for a very long time.
And of course, it's always, you know, interesting to see when someone puts up that a normal person should know that a normal healthy marriage was between male and a woman.
That's right. So he's talking about same-sex marriage there, but missing the point about. You know, I mean, I don't know whether he's aware of the work that Darabin Council has been doing in the first place. And, you know, it's kind of, he doesn't refer to that at all, so you'd have to say that he had no idea, which makes him look a bit silly because he didn't do his research.
It does. Certainly he's reported as being a 21-year-old university student and independent candidate for the city of Darabin's Gazeli ward. Mm-hmm. So I suspect that this is probably his first tilt at politics, so there's a few hard learnings in there for him, I would suggest. What was the circumstance into which he could actually get that up on the website, and that's not monitored or controlled?
Yeah, they obviously neglected to disable the Facebook page at Darabin because they have a Facebook page, which is the Darabin Facebook page. These are the things that can happen. It's a very unfortunate kind of thing to have happened. And, you know, it's they immediately disabled it once this was made known to them. In their communications team.
Yeah,
it's quite interesting that someone running for an elected seat on a council is unaware, because you know you're involved in this great committee which has been formed by Darabin City Council, and you're making some great strides into making the world a better place for members of our community. Can you let us know a little bit about how that committee started?
Yeah, well, it I've been living in Darwin for a long time, many years, and I thought that I was sort of getting more aware of Idaho Day, International Day Against Homophobia, and I sort of took the step of sending an email to all the councillors saying it would be good to acknowledge this day. And one of the councillors actually did take the lead with that, and that's Councillor Trent McCarthy. He took the lead, and in the next year, so that was 2010, I think, and it took a while. Things take a while. So in 2011, there was a forum on Idaho Day, 17th of May, and at that forum, there was some structured part of it, but it was also about getting together and just saying hello and getting to know who's part of this community and to start the ball rolling, really. And there was leadership within council, so council officers were taking a bit of a leadership role as well, which is very good. So it wouldn't work without that partnership between council and councillors and staff. That forum did come up with some particular things to address, and there were, you know, some of the issues that people were concerned about were visibility, inclusiveness, safety, of course, some of the fairly, you know, ones we'd expect to come up, and also council being a bit more responsive with their services. Their services to, in particular in HAC services for aged members of the community. Also, we've got, you know, Rainbow Families represented very well in Darabin, and so Children's Services also having a better relationship, or, you know, much almost formalising that relationship. I think some of those things came out of that initial thing. And then this year, Darabin's been able to establish an advisory committee, which is a formal committee of council, and an action plan. The action plan is called an action plan from 2012 to 15. So it's the new council will have to run with this action plan, so that was a good bit of strategy. The action plan will do all that work that has been prompted by the community in different parts of council.
Mm. So what kind of stakeholders does the committee work with within the community?
At the moment, because we're a committee of council, at high level, we've been doing a lot more consultation with staff to really look at how council can become more responsive. I would love to think that one day in the future, Darabin is the place that GLBTI people want to live, and Darabin sends out that signal. So Idaho Day 2012, the rainbow flag was flying, and there was another forum to gather more information, because it's an ongoing process of people getting involved.
Thanks very much. It certainly sounds very progressive, and we note that Darabin is the second council in Victoria to come up with a plan like this after Hobson's Bay. So it's good to see that that there's a lot of work going on in this space, perhaps not in the typical large gay areas that historically have existed in the inner cities, but it's a bit further out, and so it's got a bit more reach.
So if people want to, that are living actually within the Darabin City Council area, want to get involved or help, how do they do that?
Well, I think it would be good to... There's some council, like if they called to get involved, that would be good. We haven't actually got a formal process, I don't think. I mean, because I'm on this committee, I'm not really sort of part of the sort of daily operational stuff of council. We certainly are looking at some practical outcomes. You know, that's going to be the key thing, is to get people involved. And Midsummer will have, has had a profile before, but will be a formal sort of part of this process. Really endorsing this action plan and making it work. And so, you know, the arts and cultural team are looking at how they can also do more proactive work. I can't answer that question, but customer service would certainly catch some calls. You know, if people wanted to call and say, you know, if we got you know, groundswell of, you know, a few hundred people, I'd be happy. then there would be, you know, a purpose to some of this work that we could start to develop. And we want to get the grassroots involved. So, you know, it's going to be over this year. Well, the next year, 2013, we'll start to do that. We'll start to implement some practical sort of outcomes.
That's wonderful. Listen, thank you so much for joining us on the line today. I really appreciate the time that you've given us. And for someone as myself that's just recently moved into the area, is very excited to be living within a council area that's striving so much to make the world a better place for those of us with rainbow families.
Good on you.
Thank you so much. Okay. This is Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
And again, this time of day is always time for our Round the World Wrap Up.
Wrap Up, that'll do.
Wrap Up, yes. With six transgender women arrested in the last 2 weeks and five still in prison awaiting trial, Q8 continues with its morality campaigns that also target LGBT people.
Yes, certainly. According to Kuwaiti activists, there have been 11 transgender people being held in prison awaiting a trial. Certainly, six of them have been in prison for the last couple of weeks. The laws have been rigorously enforced in Kuwait, and there are the crime itself is imitating the opposite sex, which comes up with being jailed for a year as one of the options or being fined 1,000 dinars, which is about $3,500. So it's a really pretty grim place to be if you're transgendered in Kuwait, to be sure. And this is a pretty harsh treatment.
It's really quite distressing that the situation is actually getting worse by the day. Unfortunately, it's not getting any better in Moscow, where a Moscow city court has held up a refusal to hold gay prides in Russia's city capital. The ruling was up against the gay pride parade in the Russian city, despite it breaking European law.
Yeah, certainly. And, of course, in defiance to claims that have found a loophole in Russian legislation and submitted requests for gay pride parades for the next 100 years. A very dramatic time there to be cancelled.
Russia is simply isolating itself from the modern world whilst advocating its perspective of traditional values, is one of the commentators' perspective on it. And the other point that comes out is that the European Commission for Human Rights has actually come up with a campaign or come up with a view that Russia is actually transgressing its obligations under their relationship in the European Union. So that's useful.
I think we're getting to the stage where Russia is basically providing us with fodder every single week in our Round the World Wrap-Up, because it's another sign of the dire situation for Russia's 8.5 million lesbian, gay and bisexual people whose human rights are routinely abused by the government and police.
Taking away the focus from our community, Russia's also been in the headlines as well about supporting Syria and the problems going over in the Middle East. So they've got some problems, and I don't think the UN are too happy with them at the moment.
While we're over in Europe as well, there has been some really, really good news for us. There has been the first openly gay governor of Sicily when he won his election last Sunday.
Yes, that's right. Rosario Crosetta. That'll do. I think that's how you pronounce it.
I left that for you.
Yeah, I thought you might have. He's from the Italian Partito Democratico. Oh, I've got all the good words here. He has become the first openly gay governor of Sicily.
Yeah, he's Italy's second openly gay governor, and there has been one in another province over there previously. And it's according to the new governor, chastity is the best way of life for a politician. When you're dealing with such a responsibility, you have to be quiet and considerate. So he's a fairly conservative person within the gay community.
And it's great, he actually won the election with more than 30% of votes. Yeah, coming back here to Australia, there's been a great, wonderful campaign which has been run and won by Sydney MP Alex Greenwich this weekend just gone. Now, there's been some very interesting slurs made by a Daily Telegraph article which leaks.
So basically, I'll just butt in there. The Daily Telegraph is like the Herald Sun down here.
Yes.
But in Sydney.
It appears that the piece is actually motivated by homophobia by journalist Andrew Clennell.
Andrew Clennell has revealed that Greenwich used to organise risque beach parties at Bondi to raise cash for gay lifesavers and other such awful charities.
Sounds like a great cause to me, actually. I wouldn't mind raising some money.
I would imagine he'd get a lot of boys going along to that one for reasons that I'm not quite sure about.
The reality is the fundraising was actually done to raise money for charities like a Movember and Lifesavers with pride. There was nothing secret about the parties. They were actually genuine fundraising opportunities. The very interesting part of that is also, this was also quite interesting, on Twitter this week, and Clover Moore, who was his predecessor, said, yes, he's gay and he's hosted fundraisers, but he also admitted to me that he used to play bridge.
I think that's more appalling than anything.
So it's a hilarious take on it, that they actually thought that this was going to cause some sort of political uprest. There is nothing in that story, so far as I can tell.
The French government has reportedly delayed plans to debate a proposed marriage bill. So it's actually quite interesting that they're starting to... they're insisting that they're not backtracking, but they're also not allowing this proposal to actually be debated either.
So not allowing it to be debated will certainly delay it, and I suppose there needs to be a bit of political will, and there's certainly been quite an amount of political support around it previously.
And just lastly, US actress Anne Hathaway has pledged the portion of the money that she actually made from the sale of her wedding pictures to go towards the support of marriage equality. Longtime gay marriage advocate, who married on September 29th in California, has sold the pictures to several large media outlets and is donating quite a large chunk of that money to marriage right activists.
Awesome. That's awesome. This is News and Current Affairs from a Bent perspective. You're listening to Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
It is news, views and current affairs from a Bent perspective. This is Gay Newsweek. And before we go tonight, a reminder, the Joy 94.9 Trivia Night.
Yes, so come along, because Gay Newsweek, for our first year on the air, are hosting a table. So there are a few seats still left, only a couple. So what you need to do to get hold of a seat is call now or as soon as you can, 1300-JOY-949, or pop into the Joy Studios at Level 9.
At 225 Bourke Street. You can pop up and pay, and it's $15 for a seat at the table. You can come on your own, you can come with a group of people, but there are only limited seats left on our table, so come and join us.
Yes,
come,
definitely.
Come and meet us and have a good time, because I tell you what, seriously, it's going to be so much fun.
And we're going to win, because come on, we're the News and Current Affairs show. We're Gay Newsweek. We've got all these news and awesome ideas, and we know all these things.
Yeah, we know stuff.
If you want to be on the winning team, come on in and sit on our table.
We want to give the Daltons a run for money. Who've won 2 years in a row, and it's not going to be three.
Oh, no. None of that on my watch, I don't think.
No.
Also, earlier in the show, we spoke about some alleged homophobic comments from Ananya Ananyevsky. We spoke to him this afternoon, as I mentioned earlier in the show, and he said he will be joining us in the studio next week. So we'll be asking him a few questions. If you have any questions that you want to pose to him about his comments that have been reported across the media, send them through to our Facebook page. Find us on Facebook, and you can find all those details on the Joy website.
I think it's really great that he has agreed to come in and do this, because I think it's, whether the statements are true or not and where we get to at the end of it, to come in and face up to it, I think, is a bit of a brave thing to do.
Yeah, certainly. And look, he couldn't make it this afternoon, and that's fine. But yeah, he has definitely said he will be in next week, which is great.
But this has been a Gay News Week, but unfortunately that's all we have time for tonight.
It is all we got time for. We want to thank Liz Landry for coming in to see us or speaking to us on the phone, which is like coming in to see us.
Certainly. She's from the Derebin Sex, Sexuality and Gender Diversity Committee, which is an awesome organisation doing some great work.
And a big thank you to everyone who joined in on our conversation tonight. Thanks to technical producer Matt Nock for pushing our buttons as usual with excellence. And if at any time through the week you want to get in touch with us, suggest topics or give us some feedback, just email us at gaynewsweek@joy.org.au or head to joy.org.au and find all of our other multiple social media links. We're so connected, it's unbelievable.
Definitely.
Look out for the show's podcast, which will be up by the end of the week. You can go finding, going to joy.org.au, clicking on the program guide and finding us. But until next week, we are Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt. This has been Gay News Week. Till next week, don't forget, drop us that email at gaynewsweek@joy.org.au. Suggest any topics and also any questions you have.
Here's news. They say no news is good news, right? But no news means no Gay News Week. And that would be bad news. Bad, bad news. So, for news you can't refuse, choose Gay News on Joy 94.9. Now, there's something for you to muse.
That rhymes.
You've been listening to Gay News Week. Check out joy.org.au/gaynewsweek for all of the links on how you can keep up to date with the team on social media. And be sure to tune in next Wednesday from 7 p.m. right here on Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.